Well, hello, we're back again. It's the Open Goal Podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. Simon Ferry's with us again, looking a lot better than the last time I saw you, Simon.
That was too much for me, too much to handle. Frank Derek, too much to handle for me, man.
And alongside him is a man that certainly could have handled a day out like that last week. He's been all over the world, drinking the place dry, but always keeping his professionalism, always wearing a tie, always knotted up, always clean shaven. It's the one and only Hugh Keevan. Shug, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Good to see you. How are you keeping?
Yeah, great. Looking forward to this. Always good to chat about the events of the day.
Brilliant. So we've got a few good topics for you, as ever. I know you're going to enjoy it for the next 45, 50 minutes. We're going to speak about Manchester United. What's going on at the club? Have they been in free fall since the club decided to sack David Moyes 4 or 5 years ago? We're going to look at the league so far. Hearts, Hibs and Livy all up the top of the table. Celtic and Rangers in 5th and 6th place respectively. And Dundee United, somebody was going to go on Tayside, whether it was going to be Shabba Laszlo or Neil McCann. It's turned out it's Shabba Laszlo. We'll take a wee look at what's going on Tayside and the runners and riders to replace Shabba in the Arabs hot seat. Right, let's crack on with it. I'm Mark Guidi, as I say, Hugh Keevans and our own Simon Ferry joining us. Si, yep. David Moyes is running just now. Your big sit down with David Moyes, first of all, just give us a wee insight. How much did you enjoy just spending an hour and a quarter with him?
I loved it. I could have went on for hours. As you know, we had to stop short because of the time that we had with him. But David Moyes is the first guy I've sat with interviewing, and I actually feared him a wee bit. I think I asked him a couple of questions and he gave his old death stare and I kind of shit myself a wee bit. But just talking to him, you know, his knowledge of football and the way he thinks about football, it's excellent for me. You can tell he's top level. And I just wish he'd be like that more on the camera. I said to you, Mark, you know, when I see him on the camera when he's West Ham, he always seemed really dour and down. Whereas when you see him, I know he's going through hard times. And
the other thing as well, that for all managers, particularly, it's flash interviews, it's 20, 30 seconds, and they're not there to show off their personality, they're there to pinpoint moments of the game.
But I think he becomes more likeable to fans if he does show that side of him, because within 5 minutes of talking to him, I was drawn to him. You know, and I think if he'd done that more in interviews and with players and stuff like that, then a lot more people would really take to David Moyes, because, as I say, within 5 minutes, he had me hooked on everything he was saying.
But as you know, Hughie, for interviewing for 45 years or so, it's a compliment to Simon at the Open Goal to get Davey to draw things out of him, and for Davey to be so relaxed in his company.
Well, you would never get an interview like that unless the manager truly trusted you. Mm-hmm. Because if they were in any way doubtful about you as a person, they just wouldn't do it.
He's a bad judge of character, anyway. Yeah.
Because particularly in this day and age, people are wary of being misrepresented, not coming out right in the interview. I remember going to see Davey when he was the manager of Everton. And Everton like to think themselves the people's club in Liverpool. You know, the Flash Harrys are at Anfield and they've got all the money and all the rest of it. But it was manager of Everton. I'll tell you how long ago it was, because we went and were eating chips after the game. And he said to me, "I've got a kid here. He's called Rooney." He said, "Wayne Rooney." And I thought, what a daft name that is. He'll never get anywhere. But Davey was the man for the Evertonians. And when he got the Manchester United job, I thought, first of all, he's a Glaswegian, wonderful for him, but what a place he's given up, you know, because the people adore him. And I don't think he got a fair crack of the whip at Old Trafford, and I think what happened to David Moyes there was the beginning of the rot setting in at that club.
Mm-hmm. You think about when he spoke to you, Simon, about winning football, about changing things, adapting, and I think about that Everton team. I thought the kind of glory he had, I used to love watching that, and Davies maybe get a reputation, just maybe a wee bit doing it, but you think you'd Seamus Coleman flying down the right hand side, he got him for what, $100,000 for Irish football. You'd Leighton Baines flying down the left hand side, you'd Stephen Pina, you'd balls out the ball. You think they were a right good team to watch, they were exciting, attractive football.
I loved watching Everton. I'm not just saying that because he came on, I told him that. I mean, they had good football players. Yeah. Remember Arteta, Pina, as you said, Baines, Coleman, and it was fast, and it was the tempo was excellent. They're always challenging Man United. I always remember that. I always gave Man United a right good game, even when they got guys like Phil Neville. I mean, Phil Neville wouldn't leave Man United for anyone. Mm-hmm. So for him to go to a club like Everton shows trust in David Moyes as well, you know, that speaks a lot for him.
I think what David needs more than anything now is a chance to prove that the Old Trafford experience, the experience in Spain, and also what happened with West Ham United have not left him a diminished power in terms of club management. He needs to get a job. His mind will be clear now.
Yeah.
He's had enough time out of the game. He'll come back with a fresh mindset. But he really needs to choose the right club.
You think he's made a few bad decisions, Mark, job boys?
I think the Sunderland one was one they probably knew early doors. Or else so that one was, it was a good experience. West Ham, they didn't
wrong. I think he'd done a good job,
but inherited them in the bottom three and had them safe, you know, with three games to go. When you look at, I mean, I remember when Carvalho took over at Swansea, everybody was lauding him. He was brilliant. Swansea went down. You know, David Moyes didn't get lavished with that praise. But I think spending a bit of time with him recently, you can see he's in a good place. Hughie, I mean, also what happened to Man United, left them damaged, or left them sore, as you could well imagine, because as you say, he didn't get a fair crack at the whip.
No, and I wonder now if those in control at Manchester United think if we'd held our nerve with David Moyes, how might it have turned out? Because other men have succeeded David at Old Trafford and been unsuccessful. So it's water under the bridge now. But my feeling for him is that he needs to choose the right club and prove that all of these experiences, negative experiences, because he's lost his job on all occasions, haven't left them diminished.
Yeah. That Man United job is tough, though. Eh? Yeah. You see the top manager, Van Gaal, and Mourinho spending fortunes and they can't get it right.
So we look at that then. I mean, Gary Neville, Manchester United legend through the glory years with Sir Alex Ferguson, has pinpointed the sacking of Davy Moyes as a demise of the club. Now, Davy was sacked, I think, April 2014. I think Davy was sacked. You're talking 4.5 years ago. Van Gaal, Mourinho, they're now talking about it. I mean, it just seems to be every few months there's somebody else getting linked with them. There's a lack of stability there, Hugh. Is that fair?
The biggest negative influence at Manchester United is Jose Mourinho, because he has never fully assimilated himself into the club. The fact that he still lives in a hotel in Manchester, there's no way that he's fully embraced the club. And the fights that he picks now, with Pogba in particular, the way he conducts himself in front of the media, Manchester United think of themselves as the biggest football club in the world. We can argue whether that's truly the case or not. However, you cannot have as your public face this dour, unsmiling figure who walks out of press conferences, who will give the press short shrift because his team have been bad. And he's now taking them into a place where I don't think there's any point in him staying at Old Trafford. I don't think there's any point in the club continuing to deny that he is the problem, and they should be getting someone who fully embraces the philosophy. I know that from the time Sir Alex retired, it was always going to be an unbelievable job to try and replace the greatest manager that British football has ever seen. However, they're now in a position where they've got the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they should just admit it.
What would Alex Ferguson think of this? What do you think, Matt?
Oh, he's obviously he'll be very disappointed about what's happened. I mean, you talk about that. You look at Liverpool from Bob Paisley to Joe Fagan to Ken Dalglish. They've not won a title in over 20 years. Kenny was the last manager, and I think Man United will win a title in the next 20 years, but it's going to be a struggle for them, isn't it? It really is.
You look at Man U, and you know the draw with Wolves, I understand, because Nuno Espirito Santo has done a tremendous job at Wolves. Frank Lampard going there with Derby and knocking them out of the Carabao Cup, I don't understand. The West Ham performance, I do not understand either. You've got a Manchester United team bordering on not trying. So there's a malaise, and the malaise starts in the manager's office, and they should get that sorted out, because they're going nowhere under Jose Mourinho.
Right, we're going to continue to speak about Man United for the next 4 or 5 minutes, but we'll flag something up and we'll come back to you at the end of the Man United chat. Who is a replacement for Mourinho? Who is somebody that they could, you know, that the possibility of getting? But before we get to that, Gary Neville says that, you know, it's a 100-year of tradition that has been ruined, you know, with the way the club have ruined it. Ed Woodward, the chief executive, the Glazers, the American owners, do they carry the can for any of this?
When you talk about a club, the Manchester United of my childhood, it was about Zermatt, the Munich disaster, the way that a nation took Manchester United to their hearts. They then became the nation's football club. And the years have gone by of Law, Best, Charlton, the European Cup under Zermatt, everything that was achieved, and then the most glorious period in their history when Sir Alex took over and had five barren years and then gave them the golden era. Now, that club was loved. This club, once you are taken on by corporate strength, I think your soul, to some extent, disappears. You become a corporate entity, mm-hmm. and that's what they are. They need a great football manager now to get trophies back, to give the supporters a love of the way Manchester United play the game, because the way they play the game right now is not what all of us were brought up to believe in. So they are a club in search of their soul and a manager.
Si, as a footballer, mm-hmm. Paul Pogba, is he a chancer?
Didn't even get me started, honestly. Didn't get me started. He'd have been at the door a year ago under Alex Ferguson.
Why?
Because he's not a team player. All he cares about is himself, you can see that. All he thinks about is Paul Pogba playing well. I think Paul Pogba would rather score two goals and get beat 3-2. Honestly, I do. I seen him after they got beat against West Ham at the weekend. He's up hugging and kissing all the West Ham players. I mean, that's just not on at a club like Man United. You know, these fans are travelling from Manchester to London to watch their team play. They've been beat 3-1 for a bang average West Ham team. And all he cares about is speaking to his mates after a game. And for Man United, on the manager front, I think they've went with two defensive managers in Louis van Gaal and Jose Mourinho. Mm-hmm. You know, van Gaal's
so is that
Holland's
not a point then? Is Mourinho to an extent not stifling Pogba's natural game?
I know, but France weren't exactly free-flowing. They were quite defensive and he still managed to do it for them. So you go out on the pitch on a Saturday, it's not down to the manager. And even when I see him losing the ball, he jogs back. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is that? He's the money you're getting paid, it's so frustrating, eh?
He's got a talent, though. And I just wonder if a proper manager, someone who wasn't obsessed by himself, mm-hmm. Might get everything going again, get the dressing room going again. Rashford clearly has problems mm-hmm. with Mourinho.
Sanchez as well. Well, what has happened to Sanchez?
I hate the phrase, he has lost the dressing room, but mm-hmm. Jose Mourinho has lost the dressing room. I just wonder if a proper manager... I think Mourinho shows the signs of being a spent force. Mm-hmm. I think others have overtaken him. Certainly,
he's had 15 years at the top, isn't he? When they beat Celtic Porto 2003. So you're talking about the guts of 15 years. And maybe you're right, Hugh.
I just couldn't believe that Guardiola wasn't a Man United manager. I thought it was an absolute perfect fit.
Yeah. I think Sir Alex spoke to him when he knew he was stepping down. They met in New York and... for whatever reason he just wasn't quite ready, or had already made a commitment to Bayern Munich for further down the line. But I would agree, Guardiola would be a great Man United manager.
Again, you're talking about Man City. You know, it's not the Man City of bygone days. You know, this is Sheikh Mansour, and it is the bottomless pit of money. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to Pep Guardiola, then he, I have no doubt, is on money that would water even Simon's eyes.
Wouldn't have been a tenner behind you here.
So where are we going then? Let's have a look. Zidane has been constantly linked to Loss. He's been linked with the chief executive's job at Juventus as well. Pochettino would have to be amongst the runners and riders. Lauren Blanc's kind of name keeps kind of popping up. Is there anybody I'm missing?
Again, if you think of yourselves as the biggest football club in the world, your appointment has to be on that scale. Mm-hmm. And I think that moves Zinedine Zidane there. Pochettino has done a tremendous job at Tottenham. Again, it's a step up to Man U.
He's
with
not
all
won anything,
the
is he,
expectations.
Huh? He's not won anything, though.
No. Uh-huh. But you can see a hard-working guy in there. So Zidane or Pochettino, I think, would just bring normality back to proceedings.
If, one, just one, quickly, mate, if you want to get one guy to get the dressing room together, you know who I'm going to say, don't you?
Stuart Baxter.
Terry Venables.
He nearly got LTL, the Raith Rovers shop last week.
I'm going to mention on every John, podcast.
John McGlynn just picked him at the post. LTL was ready to shut down the hotel in Spain.
The good thing about LTL, mate, he's
one up in Kirkcaldy.
He'd be up for taking the Man United job, but he'd also be up for taking the Stirling Albion job. That's the kind of guy he is.
Well, he's a grafter, LTL, isn't he? He's definitely a grafter. There's one name I think he's had fantastic success everywhere, but I wonder, like you're saying with Mourinho, is he maybe slightly yesterday's man, but I think he's got a wonderful character, he's calm and he gets the best out of players, and I just wonder, is Ancelotti still in your top 5-6? You know that sexy bracket that Man United would look at? Does Ancelotti still fall into that?
Definitely. Proven.
You look at PSG,
everywhere he's been he's won.
AC Milan,
yeah.
Bayern Munich,
plays the
Chelsea,
right style of football.
And you know, he's one that he seems to be loved, you know he can.
I wouldn't disagree with you, but Man United have to get this right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a huge decision for the club because they are looking along the East Lancs Road at Jurgen, mm-hmm. and he's got a terrific side, genuine championship contenders. You're looking at the noisy neighbours. For as long as Guardiola is there, and Aguero and all the talent that's there, they're a major problem. Chelsea. So you've really got to get this right, otherwise you become in danger of not getting into the top four. Mm-hmm. And if you're not the top four, you might as well be Bournemouth.
Well, there's a point. All the names we've mentioned, you're talking about Klopp, Guardiola, Ancelotti, Zidane, Pochettino. What are we missing? Not one Brit. They mentioned that's a point that David Moyes made to you.
Yeah.
Last week in your sit down, how is it? He thought that he would have a chance at Man United 5 years ago because they like to look at local talent. Whereas now you're thinking, I mean, it stands to reason, there's not been an English manager that's won the English Premiership.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Howard Wilkinson, I mean, that was in the old First Division. Not been, so do we have, never mind British guy, are there any Englishmen? I mean, is Gareth Southgate the pick of the bunch?
No. Gareth Southgate would never get the Man U job.
No, but I'm just in terms of Brits,
like
is he Eddie Howe?
I like Eddie Howe's the pick. I watch his Bournemouth team and I love the way they play football.
I think he is destined to
Arsenal.
Be a far bigger club, and Arsenal would be my choice as well, Simon. But there'll be an element of fear, you know, about appointing an Englishman in case it swallows him up mm-hmm. and it's too big for him. Because, as I say, they must get this right, otherwise more years will be lost. Man City might get stronger still. Jurgen Klopp might win a major trophy with Liverpool. And the danger would be that Manchester United start to recede into the distance.
It's got to be a long-term plan as well. Can't it just be? I mean, you hire Jose Mourinho, knowing his record. You know you're getting, what, 2 or 3 years of him, and he's off. You know, Liverpool, Klopp's, he's not done brilliant in his first 2 or 3 years. Has he won a trophy?
He's not, but two European finals, but he's not won a trophy.
European finals,
but fantastic football, though.
Football, exactly. And I think Man United fans will take less success and a good brand of football, a long-term project that might take a guy 3 or 4 years to win the Premier League again.
But Man United have shown, though, and that goes back to Gary Neville's point, they don't appear to have been to that anymore.
No.
There's got to be more than stock market listings. Mm-hmm. There's got to be more than commercialism. That everything at any football club should stem from what's happening on the park. And Manchester United automatically get 75,000 people at their games. But how long would that last before the penny dropped for some of them mm-hmm. and saying they don't win anything?
Mm.
Right, to round it off, the Man U chat, Hugh, I'm just going to turn into a Clyde One Super Scoreboard caller here. Huey!
Frank Faye Springburn.
Jose Mourinho. Never mind the end of the season, will he still be the manager of Man United come the start of 2019?
No,
Simon? I don't think so either. He just looks like his time's up, doesn't he? He is depressing to listen to watch. Imagine how you're a player playing for that. I mean, how can he get you up for a game? He looks like he doesn't want to be there. So if he doesn't want to be there, why should we?
Okie dokie, so we think that Simon and Hugh think that Jose Mourinho is into the last 3 months of his Manchester United career. We'll see what happens. There's certainly plenty to come at Old Trafford. Okay, we're on the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. Let's go from the English Premier League to our own Scottish Premiership.
Much better.
What are we making of the table, Hugh? It's fantastic, is it
not?
Yeah,
I mean, never think that we number one Hearts, number two Hibs, number three Livingston,
four so, Killy.
The league now ends with Ken at the end of your sentence. But
says the man who used to write for the Scotsman.
Yeah, that's why I learned the lingo in 17 years at the Scotsman. It's wonderful. We've become unused to the idea of competition. Celtic, through their own endeavours, have dominated Scottish football for 7 years, dominated Scottish football outright for the last 2 years under Brendan Rodgers with the double treble, and people have become unused to the idea of a competition. And now Hearts, who have been in some pretty dark places in recent years, are top of the league, and I think that's great. I think Neil Lennon is a better manager at Hibs than he was even at Celtic. And I am gobsmacked by Gary Holt and Livingston. That is what it's all about. Livingston have more points than Celtic and Rangers at the moment. Of course it won't last, but let's enjoy it while it's here.
Yeah. Simon, it's great, isn't it?
Oh, brilliant. I agree 100% what Hugh says. Neil Lennon's a much better manager, and I think his side plays better football than he did at Celtic. You know, here, he was a good manager, Neil Lennon, but his football didn't excite me when he was at Celtic. You know, it was very much 4-4-2, get the ball up to two strikers and play for that. But I mean, watching Hibs now, it's terrific. It's fast. It's free flowing. And see, for Livingston, I'm delighted, man. They were playing in League One against us 3 years ago. I checked the team after the Rangers game. I think six or seven of them actually played against us the last game of the season.
Incredible, huh?
Beat us 4-0. Jimmy Mack went through us, so I'm pulling him up tomorrow saying that was a bloody good result we got, 4-0.
But you mentioned last week when we were doing the Coopham show with Frank and Derek about the three midfielders you mentioned.
They were solid, brilliant, really good, and the three at the back as well, Mark. Decky Gallagher, the captain, I forget his name, and Lithgow,
Halkett.
I mean,
and the goalie as well,
the head, everything. Do you know what I love about them? They love defending, the three of them. See, when the ball comes in the box, they head it away, they kick it away. They're not a guy that takes the ball for the goalie and starts plays, but they're defenders, and that's what they do really well. They're a really good unit, Livingston, and tough to break down.
They must be causing panic in boardrooms at the other end of the table, you know, because there's they're what, 11 points above Dundee, 10 points above St Mirren and Motherwell, and who knows where it all ends. So everyone thought they would go down. I thought they'd go down automatically.
Thought they would struggle to win a game.
I didn't think they'd get the points that they've got at the end of the season. I thought they'd struggle to get 14 points.
They go to Celtic first day of the season, and of course no one expects them to get anything, and they don't. Then Kenny Miller leaves the club, and you think it started badly and it's going to go downhill. But Gary Holt is someone that I've met many times and I have the utmost regard for, and he started to do a great job. But the whole idea of Hearts and Hibs and Livingston being at the top is refreshing. As I say, it's not Celtic's fault that they were better than everyone for 7 years, and now they're having to work for it. I think it's good that they have to work for it, and it's good that Stephen Gerrard goes into a game against Hearts at Ibrox next Sunday, and it's practically must win for him, because if Hearts were to win at Ibrox, there'd be 11 points between them and Rangers, and there comes a point where you have to stop saying, yeah, but it's early in the season. 11 points is some gap. So it's good fun.
Livingston's budget must be the lowest in the league. Super scoreboard budget must be bigger than Livingston's budget, isn't it?
Once Hugh picks up his suitcase on a Saturday night, takes Janet out for a bite, that's it. There's nothing left for the rest of us. That's why Big Derek said to go down to one shift.
But Gary Holt has been brilliant, hasn't he? He seems such a likeable guy, eh?
Yeah.
And nothing seems to have fazed him so far. He's always smiling on the side, and I think he's been brilliant.
Been great. So, commercially, when you look at it, and the TV deal is going out to tender soon, and you know, hoping to bring in millions of miles into the game, does that help us commercially from a marketing point of view, Hugh, when broadcasters from Douse look and see, okay, there's the Brendan Rodgers and the Stevie Gerrard factor, obviously, but apart from that, wait a minute, this bit of decent competition from the Edinburgh clubs as well?
To be honest, I think it might have a negative effect,
right?
Because the broadcasters are only interested in what's commercially viable, and what they want is Brendan Rodgers versus Stephen Gerrard. And Livingston is a real inconvenience at this particular time. And who? Heart of who? Heart of where? So you know, that they really want the battle between Celtic and Rangers. However, when Livingston pop up and beat Rangers, it's good and it creates that tension. But I honestly believe that the broadcaster is only interested in Celtic and Rangers. And they'll be in. They'll be in for a better deal because it is Brendan Rodgers and it is Steven Gerrard. And the rivalry between the two clubs is now as intense as at any time in history. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was a kid in the 1950s when Celtic and Rangers, a cup final, 130,000 people at Hampden. But it wasn't like it is today. Mm-hmm. In the social media age, the rivalry is from a different planet now. Mm-hmm. So it's still there for the broadcaster, and the Celtic and Rangers will still be the reason why they'll offer more money than the last contract. But I don't believe, maybe I'm just an old cynic, but I don't believe that broadcasters do romance. They really just want Celtic and Rangers. Thank you very much.
You're an old soldier. I don't know if you're an old cynic. Simon, Sunday, Rangers v Hearts at Ibrox. Are Hearts the real deal?
Do you know what I love about this year as well? Is it just me or are Hearts much more attacking this year as well?
Yeah.
Do you think Levine's looked at it and think Celtic and Rangers aren't as strong as maybe they were the past couple of years? So it's great to see Hearts attacking. I watched a wee boy Morrison that played right wing.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm taking people on crosses in the box.
Cutting
two strikers
everything.
Up front.
Yeah.
You know, you now you see Kelly playing two strikers up front, having a go at teams. Greg Stewart, Brophy, great to watch. I think it'll be a right good game at Ibrox on Sunday. I watched Hearts against St Johnstone and they looked really good. St Johnstone couldn't get their half for about 7 minutes.
It's the acid test, Simon.
Yeah.
You know, it really is the acid test
for both clubs.
Yeah.
If you're genuine contenders. Somebody has to want, you know, if Steven Gerrard, and he's had a fantastic start with European football, but the league form simply hasn't been good enough, particularly away from home.
Yeah.
Rangers have to win that game Sunday.
Yeah. As I say, an 11-point gap, if Hearts were to win, it'd be an 11-point gap.
Hmm.
After eight games, that's totally unacceptable. Yeah. And you don't just claw it back like that. And it would make the games between Celtic and Rangers and Celtic, even more vital for Steven Gerrard, because he's already lost the first one.
I just hope that Hart's going to have a go, because you know Levine sometimes coming away to Celtic and Rangers, he goes defensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the team's flying.
Yeah.
Playing attacking football, go there and have a go, please.
Yeah. I think he will.
You think he will?
At Celtic, just going to seem to be getting things right again. Aberdeen, a narrow victory, but nonetheless, yeah. It was a victory. We know they've got European football this week on Thursday night, but are there signs that, listen, they're nowhere near what they were 18 months ago, but they're getting there.
The signs for me began at McDermott Park in the Betfred Cup. I know that they missed chance after chance, but they were creating the chances in the old-fashioned way.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to believe how Callum McGregor missed the one at the end of the first half. It's hard to believe that Lee Griffiths would head the ball into the goalkeeper rather than into the net, and so on and so forth. But it was so much better than they had been. And they've carried it on into the game against Aberdeen. And now they really have to pick up the gauntlet. I'm not talking about the match in Austria on Thursday, because I believe Celtic have to go there prepared for a backs-to-the-wall job.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's back to the league on Sunday, McDermott Park again, they really have to show that, yeah, that something has happened to reignite themselves. And I don't think St Johnstone are anything special, but Celtic are special players, and they really need to show it on Sunday.
Scott Sinclair, I mean, I read his comments and watched his interview, and the thing that I liked about him, Simon, when I read his stuff and listened to him, was he didn't blame anybody else.
No.
It was about him. He said, I've been angry, I've been frustrated. It wasn't like, oh, it was the manager's fault, it was this fault. It was about him, and I thought it was refreshing, the fact that he was very honest in his own assessment.
I think, not a top player, but he's played at the top level, you know. He knows himself when he's playing well, and he knows when he's not. The thing about Celtic that I liked on Saturday was Edouard wide and Griffiths through the middle. I think that works much better. You know, with the pace and Edouard wide, Forrest pace on the right. Before it was McGregor out there and Rodgick, and it was slow build up, slow. But Saturday they looked much more attacking, I thought. But on the other side, Celtic still look like they can concede goals for me, especially from set pieces. Aberdeen had two great chances for corners and free kicks. Mm-hmm. McGinn missed a good chance. That'd be the worrying thing for me. they'll look much more likely to concede a goal this year than they did the two previous. That's so not just worrying attackingly, but defensively more for me.
That's why I say Thursday night, Simon.
Yeah,
it's back to the wall. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Salzburg have really gone into to Germany to play Leipzig, and they've scored three goals in Germany. Mm-hmm. So you know they've clearly got something, and you have to be realistic. It's one thing taking a sore one from PSG or Barcelona in the Champions League. It's another thing taking sore ones in the Europa League. So Celtic and Rangers are into that phase of the season where you're coming out of Europa League matches and you're going into either very important league matches or cup semi-finals. So what happens midweek in the Europa League is important for your self-belief and self-esteem. So I think Celtic should just bed in Salzburg and have no embarrassments.
But again, sorry, back on Sinclair. If Celtic can get Sinclair back to his best, that could be the difference between winning and losing the league. Mm. Thinking of how good he was that first year. If you can get him back to that, mm-hmm. flying like that, you know, give you a much better chance of winning the league.
Well, not just we've spoken about Hearts first, Hibs second, Livy third, Celtic fifth, Rangers sixth. I've missed out Kilmarnock in fourth. I was at their game on Saturday. Hugh, yeah. They destroyed, and Simon mentioned actually the football they played was lovely. Mm-hmm. I mean, just some of their passing, their movement, Brophy and Greg Stewart linking well. Chris Buck born again, kept Broadfoot at the back, was solid. He slipped for the first goal, but he picked up Jamie McDonald, great save, and
Stephen O'Donnell
and
as well,
Stephen O'Donnell, sorry, and Jamie McDonald and goal. And you look at them and you think, wow, you know, for them to keep that going, but you know, Greg Stewart, he was absolutely first class.
I'm telling you, Greg Stewart is one, I know I've had a bang average career, but Greg Stewart is one of the best players I've trained and played with. Mm-hmm. See if you get a fit Greg Stewart, slim and confident, what mm-hmm. a player he is.
Oh, he was buzzing
and it shows you that because he's keeping Boyd at the team. Like, yeah. Who would have done that for the last 2 years at Kilmarnock? Yeah. And the thing that frustrated me was Aberdeen, he played wide. He's not a wide player. Greg's mm-hmm. through the middle because he's a great finisher. Yeah. And he can link play.
Lovely left peg.
He's a lovely, yeah. lovely football player.
I've got to go back to Stevie Clark.
Absolutely.
You know, mm-hmm. Because when he came in mid-season, did what he did for Kilmarnock and got the Manager of the Year award. You wonder, the second season, they're better. Mm-hmm. You can only ask for improvement, and he's done that. There's no question they're a top six club. He's got players like Greg Stewart, really. I mean, Greg Stewart went to Aberdeen and failed. Mm-hmm. He's with what would be looked upon as a smaller club. Mm-hmm. And Stevie Clark has got him at a very high level of efficiency. So Stevie Clark is just proving that he is a quality manager.
And the thing as well, you speak to the Kilmarnock players, and taking nothing away from Stevie, but you see, he keeps it nice and simple. You know what your job is about. You get a wee bit of an opposition, you know what you've got to do. He keeps it, and it just seems to be a guy that, you know, he's no flash, he's no cracking jokes, but he's a guy that they clearly want to go out and play for.
But he's, I also think he's got that fear factor. Eh? Mm-hmm. You've got that thing with Steve Clark where when he's talking to people, you know, you can tell they're scared. When he speaks up for himself, he doesn't hold back.
Is that why you don't want to interview him? You're scared to sit there in case he gives you the voice he's there.
But the wee boy Brophy's on fire as well, Mark. Eh? And I was, I'm so surprised. Did Hamilton let him go?
Lee McCulloch signed him. Hamilton let him go. Yep, Lee McCulloch signed him.
Real live wire, eh? Great foil for Greg up front. Greg's the slow fat one, and he's a wee quick, fast.
I tell you what, you're talking about that. Brophy, he was coming off. He just happened to lift the top up just to kind of give his face. What a six pack the boy's got, honestly. Took me back to my days at Albion Rovers.
Oh, well. But you know, you mentioned the fear factor with Stevie Clark. Any really successful manager I can think of had that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Morecambe and Wise could never be your managerial duo.
What about Cannon and Ball?
No, even less so. Throughout the decades, the ones that I remember as being the most successful had that fear factor. Players were scared to go in having lost a game. Mm-hmm. I don't think that, you know, you have to. The whole thing's about fear and brutality and malevolence, but at the back of their mind, they have to know he's a gaffer, that's the end of the story, and if we let him down, you're in for it.
Mm. Brilliant. Good way. Enjoyed that last wee 10-15 minutes here, talking about our own SPFL Premiership. Great stuff. And can you believe it? We're 35, more is than it? 35 minutes into the programme. And we haven't mentioned the League Cup semi-final.
Oh, the... Stuff.
Uh-huh. 35 minutes, we've not mentioned it.
Probably better not.
We're not going there. We'll try and be different. We're on the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. Right, let's go to Simon's home city. Let's head up to Tayside. Chaba Laszlo lost his job there. Simon, 5-1 defeat against the Ross County. It always seemed to be coming, that one, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not speaking out of turn here, but any player that I've spoken to at Dundee United, I'll know their names, but not one of them enjoyed it. Not one of them. They really did not enjoy it. I think they were in every single day of the week, which people might look at and say you're in 3 hours a day here and there. But when you get guys like Scott McDonald at 34 who've agreed a deal with a manager before because he's got kids who need to pick up for school, stuff like that, and then everything changes and you're in every day, and supposedly the atmosphere in there was really bad. And then who's in charge? You know, Paul Sturrock came in, loads of confusion. With players, as Hugh's just said, you need to know who's the boss.
Right.
At the end of the day, if you didn't know who's the boss, then you go to one guy, one player might go to Paul Sturrock, another guy might go to Laszlo, and then you end up everyone speaking about everyone. It just doesn't work.
One thing we can say, and the benefit of having somebody such as Hugh alongside us today, and we don't want to keep going back to yesteryear, but Hugh, Dundee United, brilliant club, an exciting job, great training facility at St Andrews as well. I mean, you can go right back to the Jim McLean days, the glory days from 35 years ago, you know.
Jim McLean banned me for signing on a bus, which I thought was a bit harsh. But Jim McLean invented the modern day Dundee United. And to some extent, Jim McLean will be the problem, because I speak to former Dundee United players who say to me, the fans still live in the 1980s. They still think it's like that. But the one word I would attach to the Chaba Laszlo affair would be eccentric. It was an eccentric appointment. It was an eccentric man who came in. And to finish on a 5-1 defeat when there was still half an hour to play was an eccentric result to go out on. So he was the wrong guy from the very outset. And they now need someone who can come in and do what Jim McLean did when he took over the club. They were pretty much a non-event. He reinvented the club, and through his sheer genius as a manager, he made them what they later became, league winners, capable of going into the semi-final of a European competition. Again, the fear factor. You know, at times he took it too far, but he was a managerial talent. I think they have to go normal now. I've heard all the names that are in the mix.
Sorry to interrupt. See, just on Jim McLean, there's something I've never asked you, but it's just came out of my head there. Obviously, him and Sir Alex were going at hammer and tongs, a new firm, you know, they ended the old firm dominance for a period. Do you think had Jim McLean get an opportunity at a Man United or a Liverpool or an Arsenal, he could have been as effective as Sir Alex?
No, I don't.
No? Why not?
Because he was offered the Rangers job and he went to Ibrox, and I always thought, if he takes the Rangers job, wow, they'll really take off. And he turned it down, and I thought, and I have absolutely nothing to substantiate this, but I thought, you've looked at that and thought, too big. And perhaps he didn't have the temperament, because he could explode. You know, I remember one night with Willie Miller, cup tie at Dens Park, neutral ground, and Willie came over with the murderous look in his eyes, and wee Jim went towards him with the psychopathic look in his eyes, and I thought, this ends very, very badly unless somebody gets in between these two. So he was fantastic, but temperamentally he could lose it, and we all know that before he left the club there was an altercation with a journalist, and I always thought that was really, really regrettable, because it overshadowed so much of the great work that he had done as a manager. And believe me, Dundee United owe everything to Jim McLean, and now they should look at a guy like Jim who comes in with no particular reputation, decent player, not an international player, but clearly knew the game inside out. Robbie Nielsen gets quoted. When Robbie Nielsen left Hearts, they were second top of the Premiership. I would think there's an honest, hard-working guy in there. I don't know. I can't tell them who to appoint. But Shabba Laszlo was entirely the wrong appointment. And they need to get it right because they've been three seasons now in the Championship. And when they went down, everyone thought they'll bounce back up. No. Next season, no. Next season, no. So they have to arrest the decline or they'll become a nothing.
Who's a man, Simon?
These people are thinking when they appoint Shabba Laszlo. See if the fans and journalists get outside. Straight away, we can tell it's not a good appointment. So what do they see in people? It's crazy, isn't it? For me, it would be Robbie Nielsen.
Yeah.
I think he's a good manager, Robbie Nielsen. Like you said, had Hearts up to second in the league. I know, if he's speaking to players, he's very well organised. As you said, he's a hard worker. And I think that's what Dundee United needs right now. A guy who'll get them organised. Because they've got good players. Dundee United have got good players for that division. I think if they can get organised and hard working, I think they'll have a good chance.
So for a guy like Barry Robson, who you sat down with in the summer, who's earning his stripes at Aberdeen under Derek McInnes on the coaching staff, played for Dundee United, knows the club, do you think a job like that's just a wee bit too soon for him?
I think so. I think he needs to go and earn me stripes in the lower leagues. You know, guys like Barry Ferguson went and done it. I know everyone speaks really highly of Barry Robson, and he has worked under Dell, which will be a good... It's not like he's walking straight into his first job, you know. He's worked under a good manager for 5 years now, maybe, two at Aberdeen reserves, but I think he should go and get a League One or League Two job before taking one of them.
Cutthroat nature to the whole division. You know, Ian McCall has done a sensational job at Ayr United, and they're top of the league. You've got Ross County, Inverness, Cali. But if United appointed the right man, and he could hit the ground running and get fans on side as well, because they must be demented with all of this carry on, he could still win the league. He could still be promoted.
In a decent position. There's plenty of time to sort it out.
Yeah. There's plenty of time, and there's not a great points differential.
As you said, because Ian McCall's kind of thrown a spanner in the works with how well Ayr United are doing, but remember Paul Hartley was the first to lose his job in that division at Falkirk, and I remember speaking to Paul a couple of days after, and he says there'll probably be at least three, maybe four more managerial casualties in that division alone. He says because the expectation level of your Partick Thistles, of your Mortons, your Falkirks, your Dundee Uniteds, your County. Ross Counties, your Inverness are going to be as such. Not every manager is going to be able to satisfy.
No.
There's going to be two or three of them out with. He said, so there will be more to come in that league, won't there?
See, that Dundee United job, is it a bit of a mess behind the scenes?
Well, I wouldn't pretend to know, but there's been the boardroom upheaval. When the Thompson family got out of the club, people were appointed then to the key positions that the fans didn't entirely believe in. So that will need to take care of itself, but they need to appoint the right football man. The great irony is Ian McCall would be the one.
He went
to Dundee United years ago as the hottest managerial ticket in the country.
That's right.
And he didn't have the discipline about himself that was necessary to carry the job through. For a terrific manager, he's now in a place in his life where he's happy and contented in every way. He's clearly a first-class football manager, but you're unlikely to be asked back a second time. Who knows, though, in this crazy world that we live in. But the right appointment, they are not that far off the top that they couldn't win that league.
Who would you give it to, Mark?
I think Robbie Nielsen would have to be a contender. Jim McIntyre strikes me kind of guy that could go in there, and particularly if he's allowed to take Billy Dodds in with him. Dodds, he's got a great affection for United.
United fans like that as well, don't they? They like having a connection.
Jim played for him, and they're the kind of guys that could get the club with the scruff of the neck. And as Hugh said as well earlier, you're talking about managers. I think players in there don't fear anybody as much as I think Laurie Ellis is a terrific coach. The boy who's staying on, who's been there. But I think Dundee United players, you know, I think there's maybe that wee bit of...
There's an element of circus that comes with Shabba Laszlo, and that's why I thought, no, they haven't given him it, have they? And so Billy Smart moved in, the big tent went up, and look, but they are not an irredeemable case. They can still, with the right appointment, win the league and be back up in the top flight.
Right, I was going to say across the city, but it's not across the city. It's 150 yards up the road. Your old club, Dundee, Neil McCann, big win for him. Dundee beating Hamilton Accies the other weekend. I think it's safe to say he definitely needed that one.
Oh, 100%. I think if they'd lost that, I'd have been it. But, you know, I watched the game and I think the result papers over the cracks. I really do. Hamilton hit the bar twice, hit the post, had a couple of great chances. To me, Hamilton looked like the better team. But you never know what a result can do. And hopefully now for the club that they kick on. I think, again, Dundee have got good players. I think Rory Deacon's back now fit, who's a very good player on the wing. The boy Kamara's fit again, centre midfielder. So, they one or two players getting fit and coming back could make a big difference going forward. Plus, a win added to that. But it's so important that they go and win on Saturday at home.
It's bizarre, you know, that they have 7 defeats on the bounce, 6 in the league, 1 the League Cup, and no damage has been done. Mm-hmm. Because one win at Hamilton took them to within a point of St Mirren and Motherwell. Mm. You know, so, but I tend to agree with Simon. They were lucky to get away with it at Hamilton. And, you know, fine, as we all know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. But if we're talking about sustainability, do they have it? I don't know. Then again, do St Mirren have it? I don't know. Because they've got a new manager and they've played 3 games under Oran Kearney and haven't scored a goal.
Yeah.
So Motherwell, for all the praise that's been heaped on Stephen Robinson, and deservedly so, they're 7 games into their season and they've got 4 points. So they really need to start moving themselves as well. So the cutthroat end of the division is just that, cutthroat.
I think Motherwell are always competitive in their games, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, they're always close games Motherwell are in.
And sometimes Saturday, Dundee Curtis Main scored that penalty, they go 2 up, you know, and it totally changes the face of the game.
I think Dundee, it's always been a problem up there playing at home at Dens as well. Mm-hmm. The crowd can really get, as I know, the crowd can really get on your back. And I think their home record over the past couple of years has been terrible.
Yeah.
And if your home record's no good, there's always a chance you've got a chance of going down.
You started the conversation, Mark, with the nature of this division, with Hearts first, Hibs second, Livy third. You truly never know the minute this season, because Rangers approached the Tony Macaroni with a swagger and left it with a stagger, because they had been...
He's been mopping all week in that one. He must have got that off Alec Ray last night. No,
Janet gave him that line before I left the house. You know, and you cannot clearly work out what's going to happen next anywhere. Mm. You know, Hibs went to Livingston, goal up, lost 2-1.
Celtic lose at Kilmarnock.
Celtic goal up, lose 2-1. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the attraction for Mr. and Mrs. Joe Fan and their wains. This is part of the attraction. You don't go anywhere now. No matter who's playing, you don't go anywhere now and say, well, they're a certainty.
Yeah. And that's a beauty. That is a beauty of our SPFL Premiership. It's been brilliant. Oh, what's that been? Boom, 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 boom. Oh, 50 minutes almost. 50 minutes of top stuff from Hugh Keevans and from Simon Ferry. Gentlemen, thank you once again for joining us on the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. It goes without saying, we wish Celtic and Rangers all the very best on Thursday night in their Europa League ties, and we hope that our own Premier League lives up to it this weekend with the fixtures on Saturday and Sunday. I'm glad you've stayed with us. I know you've enjoyed it, and you'll be back with us next week. Take care.